The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Christmas Eve, and on today's podcast, in fact, I should say, listen, happy Christmas, Steve, to Upland holders, because on today's podcast, I have Steve Staley, Dr. Steve Staley, Chief Executive Officer of Upland Resources, and Steve discusses an update on their Tunisian license and progress at other parts of the business. I also have on Andrew Pelayer, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources, VAST, and Andrew discusses some of the highlights from their interim results and comments on their bridge funding. Plus, it's a Monday, so Malky's here just before he pops out and does some Christmas shopping, and he talks about Frontier Resources, Fera Petroleum, Present Energy, Soco International, Victoria Oil and Gas, Savannah Petroleum, and Pantheon Resources. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Steve Staley, CEO of Upland Resources. UPL is a ticker there. Steve, Merry Christmas Eve to you.
Merry Christmas to you, Justin. Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah, it's, do you know what? I love it when the markets are open. For me, I love it when they're, you know, right up, because over Christmas, when the markets are shut, I get a bit bored. And so I love having news right up to the end day, and the main day. And so you've had a bit of cracking news out, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, Steve, as always, there are people maybe listening not quite familiar with the company. So can you give a brief summary as to what Upland Resources is all about, please?
Yeah. We're an oil and gas exploration and production, hopefully, one day, company. We are listed on the main market. We're a standard listing, so we're not AIM. We are active in the UK and, well, now in Tunisia, but also interested in Malaysia. And, yeah, so that's a sort of brief thumbnail sketch of what we are.
Yeah, well, we can talk about those in a bit. Before we do, let's get on to this Tunisian license update. What's happening here, please, Steve?
Yeah, well, we've just announced this morning, as you've seen, that we've had our application for a license called SOAF, which is onshore Tunisia, approved by what's called the Hydrocarbon Consultative Committee. That's made up of various ministries within the government of Tunisia, and this is the, you know, big hurdle to have got over. It's the formal stamp of approval from the Tunisian government for what we're proposing to do. What it is that they've said what we can do is have a license over just over 4,000 square kilometers of what we think is very prospective acreage. It's a joint venture arrangement with ATAP, that's the Tunisian State Oil Company, as our partner. So we're very excited about this and keen to get going and start working on it.
Yeah, 4,000 square kilometres, that's a big area, isn't it? What do you know about this area? I mean, I know you are going to be going through and processing and publishing a competent person's report, but what do you know about the area so far then?
Well, you know, we've done data rooms there, looking at the existing data, of which there is, you know, a reasonable amount of existing 2D seismic data. And there's a few wells, but it's a lightly explored area. You can see, though, even from satellite images and from driving around the area, the structure that's going on under your feet. And a lot of these structures are, you know, undrilled. One has been drilled. Well, several have been drilled, actually, but Dakrila was a gas discovery back in the 1950s when nobody wanted gas. So that's a lower risk prospect already there. And, you know, we can see a number of others over this large area that stretches from the coast, essentially between Sousse and Hammamet, well inland, up into the hills. So it there's an awful lot of potential there.
Yeah, so suffice to say, you know, discoveries here could be, you know, transformational for Upland. Is that the case?
Sorry, say again, Justin, you broke up there.
I was saying, suffice to say, you know, any sort of discoveries here could be sort of transformational for Upland.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The beauty also of this area is that you've got gas pipelines running right through it. You've got the big one, what's called the Transmed, that takes gas, most of it coming from Algeria, all the way to Sicily and then into Europe. It goes right through the middle of our block. Yeah. And we've got smaller ones as well, for smaller discoveries that could also access local markets. The Tunisians need more gas and they pay very good prices for it. So, you know, discoveries of virtually any size, as long as they are of a, you know, decent size, will be commercial, should be commercial. So, yeah, it's in a great location.
Yeah. And so, and take us through sort of hopefully the time frame and timeline of events that you hope to achieve here then, Steve.
Well, we will be starting working on this very soon. Obviously, the next event in terms of announceable events will, as regards this activity, will be publication of the competent persons report. As we said, that's already well advanced in being built by our competent person. We will be looking at the existing data, indeed we already are, and we will be reprocessing seismic data over the next few months, shooting new 2D data, and that will build up towards the target, really, of drilling a new well. You know, can't give you an exact time frame for that. We need to choose a target, and we need to do that with ATAP, the State Oil Company, as our partner. But we're keen to get this moving as quickly as we can, and as are they, because, you know, they need the gas, and, you know, we think the potential is very good.
Yeah. Well, talking about news and things that are happening right now, I mean, on the 19th, you announced the WIC rig mobilisation, so that's ongoing. So, what's happening there? I mean, because I know a lot of private investors, you know, are excited about this because there's several companies involved here, and, of course, the same rig will go on to drill Coulter there. So, at the moment, that must be on site now, isn't it? Pretty much, or close to, or what's the deal?
Yeah, well, we can't really say, but, you know, watch this space. As you rightly said, we announced the mobilisation of the rig last week. And, yeah, so I think, you know, exciting times ahead is probably the best thing I can say about that at this point.
Yeah, and take us through what you know about that and what the potential is for you there, if there's success there.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting and interesting. The WIC prospect is large. It's not been drilled before because the major geological risk on it is, do the faults seal? And they're big faults. And we've looked at this in considerable detail. And we think there's a good chance they do. So, what we have to remember is that this is an exploration well. I mean, the clue is in the name. You're never sure what you'll find. But we think there's a good chance of success here. And the potential for the size of the prize is large. You know, as we've said, there could be 250 million barrels of in-place resource here. It's quite a complex area structurally, as far as the geology is concerned. But that's part of the reason why it had probably not been drilled before. So, you know, with new ideas, new technology, new software, you can look at these things again, and you know, you see this all around the world in oil and gas. And this is, you know, this is a very good, I think, example of applying that principle. So yes, we're very excited about it, and it's for investors. Obviously, this is quite a near term event. It's not a terribly long well in terms of time. Only 1,250 meters to TD. So, it's an interesting new year, I think.
Yeah, so, how long, you say not long, but how long would that take, do you think, about to drill that?
One doesn't like to put too many, be too specific about the number of days, but, you know, drilling time, yeah, you're looking sort of in the high teens, possibly, in terms of pure drilling time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Okay, and final part of the puzzle here, Sarawak. I mean, we've not heard a lot from that in the last few months, but obviously that's where the big guys with the big deep pockets are standing behind you. And that's so what's happening at Sarawak?
Yeah, Sarawak is moving forward. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we've not said a lot about it recently, but we are moving forward, and we're very encouraged by it. We'll hope that we'll be able to say something to the market over the next couple of months. I think all in all, with the three projects, we're going to have a pretty interesting few months ahead.
Yeah. Well, for people not familiar with the company, update. Where are you? What position you are with Sarawak, and what's the deal there? What's happening there?
Yeah, we signed an MOU with a company called Brook Dockyard and Engineering earlier this year, and they are the only Sarawakian government owned upstream commercial entity, and they're involved in building topsides and other such structures for the oil and gas industry and other things. They're engineers in general, and the government of Sarawak is very keen to put us together because of the nice fit of skills between the two companies. But also, in parallel to that, there's a process going on where the Sarawakian government is looking for a devolution of some powers to itself from central government in Kuala Lumpur, and not least of those is in the oil and gas sector, where an awful lot of the national and Sarawakian revenue stems from. Yeah. So there's a process going on whereby central government and Sarawakian government are determining exactly how that will work. That is now moving forward, and they seem to be moving forward in a spirit of cooperation between the two. We enjoy good relations with both Petronas, which is the national oil company of Malaysia, but also with Petros, which is the relatively newly formed equivalent at the Sarawakian level. And we're keen to work with both of them. And we are having, I think we tweeted some pictures, which some of our investors may have seen. Mm-hmm. We are meeting with both of them, and with each with the full knowledge of the other, just to make sure that we're moving forward in the right direction together. And, very encouraged by how that's working.
Yeah, and again, that's has massive potential because, like I said, the prospective resources there, huge, isn't it? I mean, you're next door to Brunei, and something that Brunei made his billions off oil and gas, didn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's what they, as we say in oil and gas, it's a good address for oil and gas. So you are close in Sarawak to some of the very biggest fields in Southeast Asia. Geology doesn't tend to stop at borders. So there is potential there, undoubtedly. And we've had a chance to look at quite a lot of it and have honed in our interest on some specific areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Steve, one final thing to do. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are still not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay. I suppose the first and the nearest term would be WIC, the WIC well. That is very near term. That's, not far off starting drilling. And big target there. So that's one good reason. We have 40% of that, so it's very material for us. Next thing is SOAF, which we've just announced this morning. Excuse me, talking in the throat. And that, again, we're going to produce a CPR soon. That will detail what we think is there in terms of resource. And that, again, I think will be very exciting. And thirdly, Sarawak, where, again, big potential, we believe, and an asset that we're after. So we have 3 points there, all at slightly different stages of development, but which should give us a very interesting 2019.
Marvellous stuff. Steve, thanks for coming on Christmas Eve, and hopefully, I think without doubt we'll be catching up in the new year. And in the meantime, have a happy Christmas and speak then.
My pleasure. Happy Christmas to you too, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Player, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources. That's VAST. Andrew, happy Christmas, Christmas Eve. Good to see you working, I suppose.
That's right. Always working in this business, Justin. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for having the interview on Christmas Eve.
No worries. Well, listen, I know it's... you know, it's almost Christmas Day where you are, because I know you're the other side of the world. So
that's right.
Yeah, but you've just had your interim results out. We'll go through some of the highlights of that, and we'll tackle some of the issues as well people have been talking about as far as Vast are concerned. Before we do, Andrew, for people listening to this and not familiar with the company, just summarise Vast, if you could.
Certainly. Vast Resources is a multi-jurisdictional, multi-commodity company operating in Zimbabwe and Romania. In Zimbabwe, we have the Pixton Peerless Gold Mine and Eureka Mine, which will be coming into production next year, as well as, of course, the Red Mercury Diamond Heritage Claim joint venture, which will also be hopefully in operation early next year as well. In Romania, we've got the Manila Polymetallic Mine producing copper and zinc concentrates, and soon to have the Baeza Mine that we've been waiting for a very long time, the 6% copper equivalent polymetallic mine as well, with high gold, high silver, high lead and zinc and copper. We're very excited about 2019 for the company, both in Zimbabwe and Romania.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your interims are fresh out this morning, and so for the 6 months ended the 30th of September. So take us through some of the highlights, if you could, of that, Andrew.
I mean, look, when the quarterlies came out, production report, everybody was a little bit upset. But as I said, I don't want to do quarterly production results because it doesn't give a true statement of where the company is, because, you know, you have good quarters, you have bad quarters. But if you look at the interims for the March to September, you can see that overall the company has performed quite well. You know, 47% increase in revenue in both jurisdictions. You know, they were impacted slightly because we had this foreign currency loss this interim period, but that really isn't a real cash cost. It's a bookkeeping cost. You know, there's 83% decrease in total losses. That's because we had the write-off last year, so it's a little bit out of kilter. We have cash in the bank after the recent bridge funding, which will be converted into real cash once we get the Mercuria drawdown in tranche B. You know, Pixton Peerless was up 8% in gold production. Manila was 61% up in copper and in copper produced, 97% increase in zinc. And, you know, there's been a lot of, and of course, during this interim period, we took the Blueberry Mine on, which will be releasing the final drilling analysis in the first week of next year. It's all prepared. It just needs to be signed off to go out. And of course, you know, we've signed that heritage concession on the diamond fields, which, you know, hopefully we'll get some official announcement out in the next week or two. Well, that all depends on the government in Zimbabwe. We can't actually say when it's going to be released, but we hope to get some good news out to the market shortly. So all in all, the period's been quite good for the company, and you know, it didn't reflect in the last production results, but overall for the 6 month period, it was actually not too bad.
Yeah, yeah, okay, cool. So that's going in the right direction now. I assume, you know, private investors have been contacting you about this bridge facility you've taken out. So, you know, because people are always concerned about convertible loan notes and stuff. So what's your take on that, Andrew?
Well, I mean, there are several reasons. First of all, everyone knows that we struggled many years to get the Baeza license, and the delay in Tranche B funding, which I can honestly say has been no fault of Vast, it's really a matter of an issue that is being fixed at the moment, resolved. We still strongly believe that we will close the Mercuria Tranche B funding well and truly before the convertible can be converted. And if not, we've already got, you know, Plan B and Plan C in place just in case, in the worst case scenario. We didn't anticipate that we would need to do this at this point in time, but there are certain aspects that needed to be done. One is the long lead items on Baeza to get that into operation, which is operationally profitable virtually from day one of reopening. If we were to wait any longer to order some of the equipment, then we would miss that target of opening up in H1 next year, you know, which we want to be operational, you know, by June at the latest. So that was a very important aspect. Then there were some costs associated to Red Mercury. So we needed to be able to have the ability to show that we have the ability to go into production. So that was very important for the company. So there is method to the madness. And what people tend to forget is that we have this historic loan that I inherited with our partners in Zimbabwe, which doesn't exactly allow us to go out and do traditional funding. They've got first right of refusal for any loans. So we have to be very careful on where we use the money, where we get the money from. There are only certain type of loans that we can procure for this sort of emergency situation because we have quite a few restrictions. I can say, however, that also the market probably doesn't realise that over the course of the last 9-10 months, we've actually paid back, you know, $2.2 million worth of debt to Sub-Sahara, another $400,000+ in interest over that period from that historic loan. So we've got to be, you know, we've got to take things into consideration that in this last 6 months or so, you know, we paid over $1.8 million to Baitza, which we're not meant to pay until 12 months after we got the Baitza license, but it became a condition of actually obtaining the license, and we didn't want to be in the position where we didn't pay the money and we delayed another 2-3 years and getting the license. So, you know, between $1.8 million that had to be paid to Baitza, so the $2.2 or $2.6 million that's gone to Sub-Sahara, you know, we need to, the shareholders need to understand there's a lot of information that's in the public domain, and if they go back over time over RNSs, they will see all of these things coming together. But when you look at it, you know, you're talking about $4+ million or $4.5 million that's gone out of the company that didn't go into directly in the business but went to part of the growth of the business. And, you know, this is all for the benefit of the shareholders and for the company, you know, medium term, even short term. So, you know, when the diamonds come into production, we're going to have an incredible business there with the backing of the community. When Baitza is in operation, that's a business that can run the entire company on its own and still pay profits. So we've got a lot of things happening in the business. And this bridging loan, which we are confident we'll be paying back before the conversion period, was, you know, not ideal, but it was basically the only thing we were capable of doing to achieve the result we need to achieve for shareholders moving forward. So really, you know, it's a rather unfortunate, you know, state of affairs to have to go to this sort of, you know, unconventional funding. But, you know, we wouldn't have done it if we thought that it could turn into a death spiral. We're very careful of the way we did the loan. We were very careful that we had a period of non-conversion. And as I said, we are confident that we will draw down T2 from Mercuria. And if not, there are contingency plans in place that will prevent that from happening. Mm-hmm. To the best of our ability, we've been as careful as possible with shareholders' investment.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So essentially, it's a short-term thing, but it's done completely with the shareholders' interest at heart. Because, you know, whenever a private investor sees convertible loan notes, it's almost a quick intake of breath, you know, and a worrisome thing. But you're aware of that, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, look, the company unfortunately historically did, you know, some terrible funding deals a few years ago, and we said that we'd never do one again. But, you know, when you have to look up what are the benefits to the shareholders as opposed to the perception. And, you know, we did it similarly in, I think, late 2017, one with another one, which was also on a very similar basis, and it was paid back in time, and there was no conversion. So based on the fact that we've historically achieved paying back one of these convertible loan security debts and paid it back, I think we're confident saying that we're going to achieve that again with this one. So, you know, the board did, you know, carefully considered. We did have other options available. Unfortunately, we are restricted on the type of loans we could get because of our the preemption rights of Sub-Sahara that are in place at the moment. Once that loan is paid out in full, we can go back to conventional lending. So, you know, there are steps being taken to make sure that this never happens again. But we do not believe that it will be converted. And we're very, you know, we're very still very confident that Tranche B of Mercuria will draw down. And as I said, if they decide not to proceed, it's through no fault of VAST. But we don't believe, we still believe, I mean, we speak to them daily. So we're still of the strong opinion that they will settle, you know, as soon as they come back from New Year. So anytime after the 7th, they'll probably end up closing. We're hopeful and I'd say confident it will happen before the 20th of next month. They've got ample time. The issues that needed to be fixed in Romania as far as the technical issue that was outstanding will be remedied on the 7th, and after that it will just be normal closing documentation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, well, one final thing to do then, Andrew. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing here, the progress you're making, but are not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, most definitely now's the time to buy Vast Resources. I think it's at a 12-month low. For reasons that unfortunately are perception based, it's in its best position it's ever been in. We've got the Baiza license, we've got the diamond concession. Pixton is doing very well. Manaila is doing as it should and as we always believed it would. Unfortunately, it will do a lot better once the Kali Baba plant opens up. So we're going to have, you know, 3, 4, 5 operational mines over the course of the next 12 months, and the company is seriously undervalued. I believe that once those operations are in production, we'll be doing that sort of revenue, our market cap revenue per month. So now is a very good time to buy Vast shares.
Excellent stuff, Andrew. Have a happy Christmas, and no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future, but in 2019. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Have a very Merry Christmas.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is oil and gas sector specialist Malky. You're all right, fella?
I'm very well indeed. Long time no speak, Justin.
Yes. What's your plans for Christmas? You just staying home, or are you going away or something?
Yeah, I'm staying at home. After this and a quick blog, I shall be doing one or two final little bits of shopping, Justin, and then I will close the gates and get stuck into all the things that one enjoys getting stuck into.
Yeah, do you know what? I love it that you are leaving some Christmas shopping to Christmas Eve. That's the way men do it, proper men. It's not all about this months in advance. Just get out there, last couple of, it's almost like, working to a deadline always works, you know? When you've got a deadline to hit, that's Christmas Day, you can do it, you know?
It'll go like clockwork today because I've got a 26-year-old son who has bought nothing yet.
Yeah.
So we'll drive into town and I will drop him off for an hour or two and he will run around. And then we'll switch driving seats and I will go into town and do a few bits and then he'll pick me up. And then we'll go down the pub.
Perfect. It's, you know what? It's been a sort of tumultuous year, isn't it, for the oil price? And, what do you see? I mean, no one can predict the future, of course. But, I mean, do you see it's stabilising a bit in 2019?
Well, I think it will. I mean, you know, it's come down way more than any of us. I mean, you know, I had the oil price quite right for the last couple of years. The last bit I just haven't read at all. And it's come down, you know, much more than I expected. 45 and 54, for West Texas and Brent is lower than I thought. Partly because when it came down after the Iranian sanctions thing happened, that we hadn't realised that that first of all that the US were going to give more waivers than expected, and that the Russians and the Saudis were increasing production like crazy because they thought they would have to take all the balance from the Iranian drop. So we had a bad start, and then it just went from bad to worse, and it has taken quite a lot of time to whip OPEC Plus into shape, and there's no sign yet that, for example, Russia have cut back and they've got to 11.42 million barrels a day. That's not including any of the US stuff. But in terms of, Saudis, Kuwaitis and so on, there's no doubt that they will start cutting back quite dramatically. They're not going to take any notice of what Trump says about trying to keep the low oil price. You know, the Saudis are trying to run their new budgetary process, and they're not trying to do it on $54 Brent, let me tell you that for certain. So I would expect what will happen is, at the moment, I wrote last week that the sort of window dressing, as you will remember, for the year end was already being done last week because there won't be anyone in today in the oil markets to speak of. And of course, you then get all the sort of funny days. So, this is what the oil price will be roughly at the end of the year. You'll get probably another couple of down days and you'll probably get a ramp up when the Saudis say that the total production cuts are going to be 1.8, not 1.2. If I had to choose, I would buy oil from this level. But then I have always said that, bear in mind that the first quarter and the second quarter of next year are going to be most difficult. I think we've had quite a lot of the most difficult time brought forward to the fourth quarter of this year. So with decent cutbacks in production And things looking a little tighter than we think in the second half of the year. And stocks coming back down a wee bit. If I had to call it, I'd call it up for next year, not down from this level.
Yeah. Before we get into sort of news or blog stuff you've been writing about, I mean, I know you've covered Frontier a bit, and today we've seen they've been suspended. Nomad has resigned. What's the deal there, then, Mark? What's happening, you think?
Well, I know what I've been told, but where the company have got a legal battle going on with the former director and a fund that backed him. And I tend to sort of try and steer clear of these things if I possibly can when it's got a sort of legal theme, to be honest, yeah, Justin. There's a lot of chit-chat going on on message boards and so on. But it's pretty binary. If they do lose the case, and there's an indication that, you know, from what people are saying today is that they might, then, you know, they're in some sort of trouble, because, you know, there's a big check to pay out, and they probably won't get the loan that they were expecting. But if they win the case, obviously, you know, they're back in favour again. I've been out to see the asset. Fundamentally, notwithstanding anything to do with the law, I like the asset because I've been over there, and I think that it's very exciting. They've got a couple of majors in one way or the other, and operationally, I think it looks very good. But when we get things like this sort of legal situation, I just don't get involved because I haven't got a clue. I don't think the lawyers are certain one way or the other, so I just sort of stand back and say, operationally, I like it, but I can't call it at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, cool. Other news out, obviously, I don't think there'll be a huge amount, a lot of news, but what's happening out there at the moment, Marley?
Well, I mean, given we haven't spoken for two or three weeks, there are one or two things I'll bring to the attention. And funnily enough, not surprisingly, when the oil price has fallen so much, there's a huge amount of M&A going on at the moment. So I thought what I'd do is talk about Faro, President, Pantheon, Soco, Victoria on Gas, and Savannah, all of which have pretty much had some sort of involvement. So Faro is the best one to start with because, you know, while we've been away, DNO, who put the bid out at 152p, I bet they never thought that they would get it at 152, but with purchases in the market at the end of last week, they've got up to 29.9%, and the share price is still indifferent and stubbornly slightly below the 152 share price, and for closing on the 2nd of January, or first closing on the 2nd of January, Faro need to pull their fingers out in terms of a white knight or a second defence document. But, you know, DNO should be praised for making this bid and having the guts to put, you know, several hundred million pounds on the table. But the short-termism of some of the shareholders is breathtakingly stupid. You know, these guys think they're smart to take, you know, 152 of cash offered by DNO in the marketplace for what is probably the best portfolio in decent-sized E&P, one of the best managements, best exploration record, strong balance sheet, good drilling program, you know, and a really good record in M&A, and, you know, finding stuff and then, you know, selling some of it down and keeping it. You know, this is probably one of the best, or if not the best, oil companies in its manner. And we are seeing shareholders, for the sake of a few pieces of short-term silver, flogging out the company when in the longer term they would be so much better off by sticking with the Faro and the management. It's not true. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, it proves my point that, when shares are low after you've had a sharp correction in the oil price, that it's cheaper to buy. I've said this to you so many times, Justin, it's cheaper to buy oil on the stock market than to go out and drill for it.
Yeah.
Which is what DNO are doing. Now, Faro needs to pull a rabbit out of a hat here, because it looks like the shareholders aren't going to support them, or they need to find a number of shareholders who are going to say, we are not going to sell at this price, whatever happens. I've got a value, given that DNO bought the first 28% on the extreme cheap that starts with a 2, let alone a 1. And at the moment, I'm being proved horribly wrong because the shareholders are saying we don't mind. But how companies are ever expected to be built by long term, particularly in a business like oil and gas, which is a long term business, how they are ever built up at all when they're sold out, whenever a cheeky cash bid comes along, I just don't understand. Mm-hmm. And there's institutional shareholders in there who should, I know they've got responsibilities and everything else, but if this goes out for 152, I think I'm going to pack up my tent and disappear.
No, don't pack up your tent, Melky. I didn't realise you lived in a tent.
If I go to the next company, President Energy, it gives you your belief in what's all right comes back to you because two things here. On the operational side, they've just flourishing like it's going out of business. They've had a stunning 3-well autumn and early winter campaign in Argentina. They said that they wanted to add 600 barrels a day, i.e. roughly 200 on each of the 3 wells. It will be way more than that. I mean, people are looking at us 1,000 barrels a day. I've got a feeling it could be even more than that, because in one of the wells they found a what is 600 barrels a day, and from the primary target, so secondary target adds 200 to that. I think that we could be a lot more than that. And of course, Peter Levine, who runs President, has been doing some very crafty M&A as well, and he's been finding that other parts near in and around his properties in the Rio Negro and so on are available. And so what he's done is that he's completed last week an acquisition which completely opens up a place called Estancia Vieja, where they have oil, but they've also got gas, and it gives them the missing piece of the jigsaw, which takes the gas all the way down to not only to with it. By January, they'll be powering all their oil production from their own gas, and then shortly after that, they'll be selling gas in the open market. Because, as I say, he's not only picked up production and reserves, but he's picked up the piece of the jigsaw that gives him the infrastructure and more importantly, the pipeline, which will get the gas to his own fields and the marketplace. So, as I say, restored my faith in things looking at President.
Yeah, PPC ticket there. What's next, Malky?
SoCo, while we've been away, have completed the acquisition of a thing called Merlin. They're paying $215 million for that. This is assets in Egypt. And I spoke with Ed Story, the CEO president there, the other day. He is very confident that they've got a very good deal here. And I tend to agree with him. I think it adds reserves and resources. It adds immediate 7,800 barrels a day of production with growing fast. They intend to expand into North Africa and the Middle East. SoCo is a business which historically has been successful in Vietnam and had a huge discovery there, for which it's been paying a large amount of money in the past. They've paid a lot of dividends out. They've been doing extremely well, and I think they will continue to do that. But there's no reason to believe that, I was worried before when they had acquisition in Central Africa, in Congo and so on, but this looks like a really smart acquisition to me. Mm-hmm. I think SoCo are very much back with us, and we'll make more acquisitions in due course.
Yeah, SIA ticker.
SIA
Anything else,
Marky? Quickly through two or three other ones. The piece of news that I'll be writing up today is an early... Christmas has arrived one day early for shareholders in Victoria Oil and Gas.
Right.
At long last, because last January they were told that in Cameroon, where they are an explorer and producer of gas, that ENEO, which they provided gas for to the government for a major league power station in Douala, which is the second city of Cameroon, but way the biggest city in Cameroon. It's a huge international port and so on. And that took 53% of their business away in a one strike. And so what's been happening since then is they've been spending a lot of time trying to get this back in place. And you can imagine these negotiations with African governments have been pretty hard going, basically because they just ran out of money. But actually, you know, it was always going to be a sensible thing to come back on, because what you've got there is, you know, they're selling a huge amount of gas, you know, at 6.5, 6.75, 7 bucks an MCF, and that is extremely good news for them. But in the meantime, the other thing that Victoria have been doing, which again is eminently sensible, is that they've been basically upping their game, because they don't just sell. They obviously, if ENEA was 53%, then 47% was to they sell gas for power and for everything else to companies in Douala, and they've got a pipeline system running all the way from their own gas field all the way through into town, and those people have been quite naffed off, as they say, that they've been having all these power cuts and everything else. So, you know, they've increased the their sales to companies direct, and they are higher margin than that, and they've also got a gas bottling system which they're going to roll out for vehicles and that sort of stuff. Bottom line is, in Africa, you know, obviously business is very difficult to conduct, but you know, they need the power and they've got the gas, and it's only a matter of putting the two together. And then of course you put African politics in the middle, and you know, it doesn't always make sense. But for the very patient shareholders in VAG, and I've been sort of, you know, I'm not a shareholder, but I am an observer, and I've been out there to look at it, and it's been sort of breaking my heart. This has been like this, and I'm very pleased that this has got back, and it's a 3-year contract, and will deliver over six million scf a day of gas, which is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. VOG. Anything else, Malky?
Yeah, briefly, I'll talk about Savannah, which last week, we've been talking about Savannah all year with this deal from Seven Energy, and yet again they tweaked it last week by amending it significantly enough to have a big RNS saying that it's changing the for the much better. They're increasing their stake in the midstream AccuGas business, and taking on a new client in the Al-Auji power station. But now they control the gas flow from the field, and Yonka field, and straight through to the Calabar power station with an extra bit of gas pipeline. So they've got another big client. There's a huge amount going on here. And so, you know, people have been worried. The share price has been sort of held back because people saying, yeah, I don't believe that Andrew Knott is going to ever close this deal. But, you know, he hasn't closed it because he continues to find a way of making it look better for his company. And I think that he's done that, and I expect to see it closed sometime in the first quarter, and then they'll move on to do more work in Niger, where they're going to test the Anti-1 discovery, bring on the EPS, the early production system, and they'll be producing 1,000 barrels a day, you know, by the middle of the year, and a bit more after that, and they're going to have another multi-well program. Don't forget, their last program had 5 out of 5 discoveries. So I think that that's one to remain with. The upside is significant in Savannah, and Andrew Knott is doing all the right things.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew came on the podcast and on the day of the RNS, and I think the market is starting to appreciate, because it did jump by about 16% on that day, the share price. So I think people are starting to see there's definitely lots of value being created.
Yeah, there. I mean, they're just worried that he's not getting it done, but he is, yeah. And he will. and the shareholders should not worry about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Is that it, Malky?
Just briefly mention Pantheon, which has been a troubled cause over the last year or two. Operationally, it's been a bit of a disaster. Now, they went out the other day and they raised some money in order to buy part of a company called Great Bear, which has a couple of discoveries in Alaska. They raised the money, all right, but then that's because the directors of Great Bear were buying the shares. Unfortunately, Pantheon has been diluted down by 57%, so Pantheon shareholders only get 43% of the combined business. But 43% of something which is doing way better than Pantheon is doing may well be worth it. Mm-hmm. The gain is that they get the management from Great Bear, who will not only be running their own, the wells that they're going to drill in Alaska, but they're going to come down and take a look at the haulics that Pantheon have made of their wells in Texas. And it looks like a combination of cheapskating by Pantheon in Texas on the wells, and they've just been a tad unfortunate. But the long short of it is now that they're getting a second chance. They probably don't deserve it. It's going to be high risk from here, but Pantheon shareholders might just get a second bite of the cherry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. PNR. Marvellous stuff. Malky, have a happy Christmas, and we'll speak again in 2019, fella.
Yeah, happy Christmas to you and all the listeners.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Gulf Marine Services, GMS, ticker there. At four, SafeStay, SSTY. At three, Mines and Machines, that's MMX. At two, Botswana Diamond, BOD. And the most followed company is GCM Resources. Now, I assume that's GCM ticker. Yeah, it is, actually, GCM. All right, top five most liked RNSs. Of course, it's a half day today, so we're shutting at 12:30, the stock market. But these are the RNSs that come out. And so these are most read and most liked, by the way. So Victoria Oil and Gas, which Malky just talked about, renewal of long-term gas supply contract with INEO. At four, it's AIM Suspension, Frontier Resources. I talked about that with Malky as well. At three, Premier Africa Minerals, RHA update. At two, Frontier Resources update regarding Cayman Grand Court action. That's the last 24 hours. And at one, of course, it's Happy Christmas, Steve. It's Upland Resources, SOAF license update. That's the Tunisian update there. And that's it for the podcast. I hope you well. Listen, I think there's going to be a couple of, depending on news. If companies release news and I have a mic, I will do a podcast. But, of course, the market's now shut until Thursday and Friday. And, like I said, I will be back if there's news, hopefully. Until then, have a nice Christmas. Thanks for listening, and speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.